good evening. How y'all doing?
Good evening.
Oh my goodness.
I love that opening. It just it brings me down. And I continue to say, I was listening to our last episode earlier today. And I know the people in podcast world can't see it, but it's so cute. So I love it.
I love it. Well, for those of you that are just relaxing and, you know, this is very casual. We're just talking about some real life stuff going on and, you know, trauma and, you know, just trying to break those cycles. And so, if you don't know, my name is Bianca Goolsbee, and I'm so excited to introduce the co-host here, Kimberlyn. We also have a guest that Kimberlyn will introduce. But yeah, Kimberlyn, let's catch up really quick. How have you been since our last episode?
I have been better. How about that? So last time that we talked, I talked about my journey in trying to find a relatable mental health counselor. And I am glad to report I've been successful in my mission twice times over. So super excited about that. And we reviewed the Dark Beauty website last time. So if y'all missed that, go back and check that out, because they're a mental health resource that provides free mental health care for women of color. So I feel like I'm winning on those sites. So yes, I'm a lot better. And to those of you who are new to our space, possibly, my name is Kimberlyn. I'm the co-host here. And I wear a lot of hats. The main one of those is being an educator, but I also do podcasts and talk shows, and I'm an author and an actor and a model and like all of these things, right? But super excited to be here as a co-host on The Whole Child. And I do want to go ahead and give our guest an opportunity to introduce herself. So she is like loyal, one of our squad members, if you will. We pulled her out of the comments and out of the shadows to come hang out with us today. So Andrea, introduce yourself to the people, let them know a little bit about you, and then we'll kind of jump into what we're talking about today.
Yeah, sounds good. My name's Andrea Williams. I am a part of Teaching for the Culture squad.
Your audio went out. Okay, there you go.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we got you.
So I'm a former school counselor for 12 years and transitioning into being an educational consultant. So that's been interesting. I'm the owner of Cultivate Academy, which I have privatized school counseling services for students of color. So I really focus on the socio-emotional development, career development, and academic development of students. And I'll be launching really soon, taking new students really soon to work with them. I also write grants. I do educational consult with ed tech companies. I just do a lot of stuff since leaving the school district, which is my biggest accomplishment to date. And I'm excited to be here and talk about racial trauma and the social emotional effects it has on students.
Yeah, so we are some multi-passionate people up in this piece. So I really appreciate that. We think it's always important for people to know that we didn't just go find somebody on the corner and be like, hey, come be on the show, right? So it's important for people to know that you're credentialed, that you're out here working, that you're connected, and that you know what you're talking about, right? So on that, Bianca, what's the name of our show today?
Oh my goodness. First of all, this is episode 16.
It is.
Kimberlyn, 16 episodes? We've done 16 episodes?
Oh, I know.
Okay, so the title is Melodies of Childhood Trauma, The Cycle Continues.
Yeah. So for any of you all, today is March 16th, right? Just for the historian's sake, right? So any of you all that have been paying attention to the news, pop culture, and what have you, there's a lot that's going on and a lot that's going around. And we wanted to take some time to unpack just one of the situations that's happening, because it's directly related to what we talk about here on The Whole Child. And that is the situation that is going on, I guess it's still ongoing, with Kirk Franklin and his son. So just a little bit of context for those who may not necessarily be in the thick of it. But Kirk Franklin has an older son. He is in his early 30s, so 32, 33 years old or so. They have a very strained and estranged relationship. Thank you, Bianca. Just put some info in the comments for y'all to go ahead on and click on that if you want to get some more background. But basically, they don't see eye to eye. And there was a situation over the past week or so, or maybe sooner, we're not sure, but was released over the past week or so where Kirk Franklin and his son are engaging in an argument. And in that argument, Kirk Franklin, so, you know, Kirk Franklin, the prince of gospel, Kirk Franklin, worship leader, Kirk Franklin, pastor, you know, evangelist, prophet Kirk Franklin, melodies from heaven, Kirk Franklin, and, you know, stomp and whatnot, Kirk Franklin, that Kirk Franklin. There was a, just making sure people know which Kirk Franklin we're talking about. So at any rate, he and his son got into a heated exchange. And during that exchange, Kirk was recorded, his son recorded the exchange, cussing at his son. So calling him an F and N word, just telling him he'd gonna put his foot in his behind, just really enraged, right? So his son recorded the interaction, leaked it to the media. So now it's all over the media and people are weighing in. Once it got out, Kirk Franklin went on to Instagram or onto his social media spaces and apologized for his behavior to his fan base. Okay. And he explained that he and his son have an estranged relationship. This has been going on for a while. And he's sorry to the people who had to see him behave in that manner. So that's kind of all the information we have at this point. So we want to kind of unpack that. And I know prior to us coming on, Bianca, you were saying that this isn't the first type of situation with them.
No. So the article that I shared, and I'll actually share it on the screen so that people can actually see it as well. But this article here that I shared with you, it actually talks about an incident that happened in 2018. And in 2018, he actually posted on Instagram that his father, we're talking about Kirk Franklin, had tried to kill him. And so that post was deleted from Instagram. Of course, there's receipts everywhere of that incident. So it's very clear that they've had this going for a long time.
Yeah. And I just saw in there, it said that they've been estranged for 14 years, right? So that is a significant amount of time. And we're not really privy to what has caused that. But what we kind of wanted to kind of talk about today is what may have caused this interaction that we saw. So first things first, did you see the video? And what were your immediate reactions to the video? So whoever wants to start, just kind of share your high level, whether you saw it, and then what was your reaction?
Oh my gosh. I saw it kind of late, actually, to be honest. But I think for me, no judgment to Kirk. I mean, we've all been there, but in talking to you about this show, I think, yes, we have to have a conversation as a community on why we so readily accepted that this was normalized. Mm-hmm.
I think for me, when I watched it, I was more concerned about the intention of it being posted on social media. It wasn't the full clip, so it wasn't the full context of it. So I was really concerned about why it was certain parts that were cut and if that was intentionally done. And so I've always wondered about, like, why is it someone's intention to post something on social media? So my commentary wasn't really about the incident itself, but mm-hmm. it was more about how it ended up where everyone else saw it mm-hmm. and why do people feel that they need to address something that's out here when it should have never been up here in the first place. And that's mm-hmm. just kind of where I was at with that.
Yeah, I kind of had a similar reaction when I first saw it. I wasn't surprised per se, right? So having grown up in church, having had access to the behind the scenes of church, right? I recognize that just because someone is a Christian doesn't mean that they don't curse, doesn't mean that they don't lose their temper, like, you know, that it's a thing. So I wasn't really surprised by that. I was definitely intrigued by why it got posted and why it was recorded. And then I immediately started to think about what's going on under the surface. So I feel like I often jump to what was the root of this, right? Because if this were a healthy relationship, I don't think that communication would have looked that way. So I then started to become very interested in the story behind the story. And we talk a lot about that, like of how behaviors manifest with children or with people. It doesn't just come out the blue. Like, there's a story behind the story. So that's what kind of made me think about, we need to get somebody on here to talk to the trauma that might be happening behind the scenes that caused all of this. And that's kind of how we pulled Andrea into this. So Andrea, not to put you on the spot, but to talk to us a little bit about, and mind you, let me say this, that we're not coming from a place of judging anyone, right? Everyone is human in this situation, and everyone makes mistakes, right? So we're not coming from that place. So don't want anybody to feel as if we're talking about you are being judged. But we do want to be able to look at this with a critical eye, especially thinking about the way that trauma manifests, particularly with our kids and the trauma that we have that's unresolved that manifests in our kids. Okay, so I haven't said that. Andrea, can you talk to us about what might be present here that caused this whole interaction? Like, from your professional viewpoint, what do you see?
Right. So in addition to my many hats, I am a researcher and a doctoral student at University of South Florida, and I study resilience. And part of studying resilience is studying adverse factors that lead students to have resilience. Mm-hmm. So epigenetics is really an interesting thing. So it's kind of science's way of explaining what we know in the spiritual realm as being generational curses, right? Okay. So on the science side of things, scientists are saying that behaviors, environments actually impede your DNA sequence. So it causes your genetic makeup to kind of be altered based on things such as trauma. Trauma is the biggest study they conducted to talk about epigenetics and how these genetic markers are passed down genetically from parent to child. One of the biggest studies was post 9/11. So after 9/11, women who got pregnant after 9/11 or who were pregnant during 9/11 actually, who lived in New York at the time, their children were studied for effects of PTSD. What they found was that PTSD and the trauma for 9/11 were present in these babies and these young children who had not even been present or born during the time of 9/11. So that was really what got scientists to really hop on what is epigenetics and how is trauma generational because of DNA sequence. So in a nutshell, it doesn't affect your actual DNA makeup, but how your body responds to certain stimuli. So the 9/11 infants or children, they would respond to blast and loud sound, having trauma from it, not having had ever been in a 9/11 during that time. So I think with generational curses such as racial trauma, and any type of trauma such as abuse, and in Kurt's case, verbal abuse is passed down. So we see even having this reaction to adult child who we didn't hear the first part of the conversation, right? Mm-hmm. So this adult child could have very well had the same language and same tone as Kurt was, and he could have been matching the vibe. But again, that was a learned behavior that he obviously learned from his father, who may have learned from his father. We don't know how far back it goes, but it could go back generations and for racial trauma. And then for us to normalize it in the Black community as a thing, like, oh, that's so normal. That's how Christians are. We know how it is behind the scenes in church. Makes it such a generational thing for in our community that we accept it and then it's normalized. That we're not talking about that it's trauma because it's so normalized it doesn't look like trauma.
Right. Yeah, and that word normal, I feel like I fight that word every single day because normal is so subjective, right? And it really depends on someone else's context of what is considered normal in one space versus what is considered normal in another space, right? So when you talk about the normalizing, and let me say this, I appreciate you making the link between the church lingo and science, because sometimes I feel like we discount what we talk about within church or within Christianity, though there is scientific evidence to prove it. So I appreciate you delivering both of those sides. As a scientist, I respect science, but everybody doesn't, right? So thank you for making that connection to these generational curses. So I guess I have a question, like raise your hand or say I, if you were ever cursed out by your parents. Yeah, often. Raise your hand or say I, if you ever witnessed one of your friends getting cussed out by their parents. Raise your hand or say I if you have ever witnessed someone who was a pastor or someone in the church who was cussing at their kids or cussing towards someone else. Right. So though that is normal, right, it is not healthy. And I think it's really time to kind of shift the conversation to the impact that this has. So as a product, and I've been very vocal about my childhood and the type of abuse that I encountered. So it wasn't just physical abuse. And honestly, when we talk about abuse, and Andrea, you can, you know, kind of speak to this as well. The physical abuse is sometimes the least long lasting of the abuses. It really is that verbal and emotional abuse. Like I can hear my mother this day saying things like, if you don't get your Black A, da 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 da, and you know, just calling me all sorts of names, or you know, me feeling like I was never doing anything right enough. And Megan just put in the comments that verbal abuse is just as dangerous as the rest. So can you give us any insight there, Andrea, about the effects of verbal abuse and how that may have been in play or was in play in this situation?
Yeah, absolutely. It does linger a long, long time. And for physical abuse, it's more readily identified. So people can go years, obviously generations without even noticing that it's verbal abuse, that it's a form of abuse. So yes, absolutely. And kids especially are not able to vocalize that they're being abused verbally because, like you mentioned, it seems so normal that it doesn't, it's not looked at as unhealthy.
So then if you have a kid that has grown up in that environment, how does that then manifest when they become an adult? You know, so we see the repetition of that behavior. So to that point about the generational curses, we see the cycle continuing. So I know I had to unlearn, y'all, my mouth was reckless. You hear me? Reckless. Okay. Like, oh my God. When I was in middle school, my friends used to fight a lot, right? And I was never really a fighter because I didn't want anybody scratching my face and pulling out my hair. But I was a cusser. So I used to cuss them out, honey, for up, down, backwards, forwards, sideways, like, honey. Listen to me. I was cussing the people. Also, I could go home and do my homework, though. I really wasn't about that life. I really just wanted to go home and do my homework, but they wouldn't stop messing with me, so I had to give them a good tongue lash. Yes. When you're talking about where did I learn that from, I learned it from my mama. So I had to unlearn that behavior as an adult. I can remember, God bless my first boyfriend, Lord Jesus. I just used to just, Lord, help me. Thank God for deliverance. Because I was a mess and I really had to, this was normal to me, right? Yeah. In my house, that's how we communicated. My mama used to cuss me up and down. She used to cuss my stepdad up and down. She cussed my brother in and out, just like that's what she did. So that's how I learned how to communicate. And it wasn't until getting to college that my friends were like, you just going to keep cussing your boyfriend out? You know what? Do you like him? Do you actually like him? Because you really, really clowning. And it maybe took another 5 or 6 years after that for me to actually be like, oh, there's another way.
Yeah.
Yeah. You cut the folks out, girl.
Girl, bad. You can everything but a child of God. Girl, bad. And I can say that because I've been delivered. Thank God. Okay. Thank God for Jesus. But it was bad. It was really bad. And one of the things that I learned in my home is how to cut people with your words. So I would go to the white meat. I would find the thing that I know is going to make you shut up and leave me alone. Like, that's the thing that I would go to. And I just wonder what that would look like if I never had that awakening to be able to say, this is not healthy. Because it was normal. It was very normal. But it wasn't healthy. What y'all thinking? Y'all not going to keep sitting up here laughing at me.
No, it's so relatable. I just had the same conversation about my mouth, and it's really hard to be delivered, to stay delivered from, yes, girl, we'll cuss you out. Flip tables, cuss you out. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. And but yeah, it's a learned behavior. That's what I saw, mm-hmm. You know.
I just think about the aspect of social media. I just, you know, all of the, you know, how we cuss people out and all that stuff that we talk about. But just imagine like the people that actually like take it one step further and actually like really amplify that on social media. And then just imagine how our kids are dealing with that on top of that. Like, I just keep honing on the social media piece because number one, this was posted on social media. So now you got all these people talking about what was posted on social media. And I guess he felt that he needed to put this on social media for whatever issues at the root that he needs to address as to why he felt that this was an appropriate action to take. And then also, you know, kind of play with narratives with that and not tell the whole story, which is unfortunate. Right. I just pray for our kids, truly, that are witnessing this type of behavior on social media, how quick we are so quick to cancel folks without having the full context of situations. So it just opens the door to something broader than just the trauma, but just the behaviors of what's happening on social media and what our kids are doing and the examples that they see from mm-hmm. the adults.
Yeah.
So as a school counselor, Andrea, I'm certain that you ran into many kids who had these types of behaviors manifesting. Can you talk to us a little bit about the types of things that you would see and then what goes on in your mind about how to help a child that may be coming with this normalcy that you recognize is not healthy?
Right. So my experiences have been in elementary and high school. So what I can say is that trauma, if not addressed, continues. So I think for me right now is my perfect opportunity to say how important school counselors are on schools, because who is going to be more apt to even, one, recognize that this child has trauma, and two, help them to overcome it. And then three, be a communicated piece between parents and the student to kind of address this as a whole. So that's my little caveat about school counselors. But no, yes, the trauma is seen on the elementary level, as young as kindergarten, and as old as seniors. Seniors are having issues trying to cope. I think students as a whole don't have coping skills anymore, don't know how to develop coping skills. We don't allow school counselors to help facilitate this because we throw them into testing. So again, another important reason why school counselors are important. But no, to help students with this for me has been to show them that it's different, especially for students of color, to show them that it's a different way to not be that person. Yeah, I know your mama coming in here acting crazy. She's going to cut somebody out. I get that. I've been there, but that's not how we handled it. So again, I feel like I'm a unicorn in school counseling world because I am a Black female school counselor that understands racial trauma. A lot of kids don't have that. But I would say to educators to be kind of aware and look deeper into what the student's issue is, because a lot of teachers will write them off as just a behavior issue, get them out of my class, but to really take some time to like kind of unpack that, even if it's just 1 hour with a student truly talking to them about what's really going on. Because you're right, there's always something underneath. There's always an underlying issue. A student just is not just want to cut the fool in school without any consequences. No, they're wanting attention to talk about something that's underneath. So taking that time to really talk to the student, build that rapport. If you build a rapport, they'll tell you anything. Like, kids say the darnest thing, but they will tell you anything.
Yeah, shout out to Megan in the comments with trauma-informed care. She said, it's what happened to you versus what's wrong with you. And that trauma can manifest in a lot of different ways. So let's kind of unpack that a little bit. How does this manifest? Like, what do you see with children that cues you in and says, something else is going on here?
Just the behavior issues in general, especially those kids that are chronic behavior issues, right? You know, the ones that stand out on campus, they're frequent flyers. Child has some type of trauma underneath, whether it's verbal abuse, neglect, whatever it is, they're confident there's trauma underneath, because why is the student continuing to act out? But often it's that student that is kicked out of school or wants to, you know, we're trying to expel them, send them to
we might have lost her. So I'll just kind of recap where I think she was going of where a student might be on that frequent flyer list. And that's the term that we use in Florida a lot about frequent flyers, or someone who is having those chronic symptoms, and training ourselves to ask those questions about what's is happening behind the scenes. You back, Angela? Can you, Lord Jesus, I say Angela, I just looked at that in the comments. Are you back, Andrea? Can you hear us?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead and finish what you were saying.
No, yes, just taking the time to listen to the student about what really is going on, taking the time to build that rapport is so important.
Yeah, so Bianca, we've talked about that a lot, of giving students voice and giving them the opportunity to talk. And Andrea was just talking about that relationship and having a genuine relationship with our kids so that they can talk about what is happening so that we can support them in that. So what I'm wondering is, for any parents that are listening or people that are responsible for children, what tips can we give them about how to, one, confront what is happening here. So in this situation, let's say we had an opportunity to sit Brother Kirk down, right? What would we share with Brother Kirk about what we witnessed in this situation?
I think as a parent, first we would have to really go back to communication styles with Brother Kirk to let him know the effects of the trauma. I think most parents don't really realize that it is trauma and that it is something that will be long lasting, not only to their child, but to their whole legacy. And I think once we mention the word legacy, generation, all of those terms really gets parents to be like, okay, let's take a look. I know even for me, once I had a child, it's like, okay, maybe I want to change the generational curses in my family. Not that they may have been good ones or bad ones, whatever it be, but just being able to, one, recognize that your family has generational curses, I think is a big thing for Black people to admit that there's fault. Which is a whole nother story, but that in itself is part of trauma, to being able to admit, hey, something's wrong. It's time to do something different. But definitely sharing with Kirk as a parent the lasting effects of what his communication style would do to not only his child, but his legacy would be something that I would start with.
And can we go back, though, to you talking about this admitting fault, though? Because I, like, why do we struggle with admitting fault?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's, I definitely think that it stems from racial trauma in itself. Black people already have so much against them. I think it's hard for us as Black people to admit that there's fault with Black people. So I think that as a community as a whole, maybe our communication style needs to change in general. Like, so many people felt that this was such a normal thing to occur that we've all witnessed it in some way, shape, or form with Black people. So whether it's a parent at a school to a student, or a parent to another faculty member, or just people in a store, especially on social media, we know Black people are never really shown in a good light. So our students, our kids are always on social media, so they see it. Reality TV doesn't do anything to combat that it's wrong, because that's what makes shows good. The fight, the drama, the people cussing people out, is what sells. It's what's fun. And we as adults, we hype it up too. So it's all around a mess.
And Bianca, I know this is one of your like hallmark things here, especially thinking about the mental charge that we get when we are in these situations with the drama and the fighting and all of that kind of stuff. So definitely want to bring you into the space, because I know that you've studied that as well. So what are your thoughts on that?
It is dopamine, just all around. You get likes, you feel good, you feel validated. You share content, you get validated with likes, and you feel accomplished. And it's just the way that we have moved. Mm-hmm. And it's really unfortunate the way that it's kind of moved. And this is why I advocate so hard about parents checking the cell phone and being intentional with knowing what your children are watching, being intentional with who your children are talking to, being intentional with their influence. Mm-hmm. These people are role models to children. Mm-hmm. This is what they watch. They emulate this behavior. Yeah. So if we're going to get to the root, we have to really examine what our kids are watching too.
Yeah. And I even think about the parents that put their discipline for their children on to the internet. Right. And how they, you know, are looking for validation, and why it's okay to embarrass their child by putting their punishment on the internet. Like, why is that necessary? Right. So to your point of admitting that there is a problem, or admitting that we've missed the mark, and highlighting that this is not just something we're doing in this moment, the long-lasting impacts that this is going to have. Because if I'm a child that grew up constantly being embarrassed, then what am I going to do? I'm going to seek to embarrass other people. right? Yeah. Then that cycle just continues. And it's normal because this is what was done to me. So that's what we do, but it's not healthy. And I think that's the thing. I made this conscious effort a few years ago to shift from using normal to healthy, because your normal may be toxic and dysfunctional, you know, and we need to move away from that into that healthy space. So you said that we would sit Brother Kirk down and, you know, basically say that this was the issue. And then what I was going to add to that is I would say normalize apologizing to the person that you hurt. Right. Because he apologized to us as fans, but we're not where the injury was. It was to your son, right? And granted, his son is an adult, and he was referencing disrespect. So, and the son was cursing back at him. So we have no idea what he said ahead of time that caused Brother Kirk to snap. But nonetheless, I was watching this live last night. This prophetess, her name is Tiffany Montgomery, and she was talking about how we can disarm someone with an apology. Mm-hmm. Like, it's real hard to keep cussing and going at it when someone is like, you know what? I'm sorry. And I shouldn't have done that. I apologize. But I apologize that I made you feel that way. And I apologize for my actions. I should have done something different. Like, it's real hard to still be gassed up going in when somebody is owning and apologizing for their behavior. So I really think that's something that needs to happen. But two, that's something that seems to be rather difficult in our communities as well. What's y'all thoughts about that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just in this movement work to fight for the seventh largest school district in the nation, I've had so much that has happened to me personally by people that look like me when we should have the same goal, and that is fighting for equity in education and justice for our students. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, it's one of those things that, again, is normalized. You see all of this on reality TV. You see this on social media. And so then, again, it's normalized as this is something that's healthy. So y'all are both right on point with all of this.
Yeah, nobody wants to be accountable. That's
what I just wrote down on this post-it note. I said accountability. Talk to us more, Andrea. Talk to us now. Talk to the people.
Nobody wants to. Nobody. So more or less apologizing. Nobody wants to even be accountable to even recognize that there's a wrong to apologize for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know why it's looked at as such a weakness in our community to admit wrong.
I wonder when you think about, as you were talking about earlier, the fact that there are so many spaces that we exist in where we can do nothing right, that we are committed to maintaining control in these situations where we perceive that, you know, we can do what we want to do because of X, Y, and Z reason, right? Yeah. So then when it comes time for somebody to bring accountability, we say this all the time, it feels like an attack when we should be inviting accountability so that we are able to do better, right? Mm-hmm. So I would welcome someone to come to me and say, Kimberlyn, when you did this, that wasn't okay. Because all I can say is, I apologize. And I can remember, Bianca, I remember a situation with us one time. You called me and you was like, yo, when you did that, bruh, like, no, that wasn't it. And I was like, I am so sorry. Like, that's all I can say. Like, I am so sorry. I promise you I won't do that no more. It was completely unintentional. It wasn't something that I meant to do, but I was so thankful that Bianca felt comfortable to be able to come to me and hold me accountable to say, this, what you did, this is how it made me feel. And because I love her, then I'm like, I don't want to do that anymore.
Right?
So it seems like we would welcome for someone to say, hey, that missed the mark right there. But instead we fight it tooth and nail and you know, really die on this sword, on this hill. And you're wrong, it's two left shoes. You're wrong. So I wonder how we move our people towards accountability and towards apologizing for missteps or for perpetuating a cycle of trauma. What do y'all think? How can we help people to embrace this concept?
I think for one is to still keep talking about it. Because the more that we don't talk about it, it's just okay. Nobody will talk about it. So I think the first step is to have some conversations like this to really address it. Like, hey, it's wrong, and we need to talk about it and keep talking about its effects.
I think that and continuing to have those conversations and hopefully people understand that there's nothing wrong with having these conversations. But I think encouraging people to actually do the work within themselves. Mm. So they can't be effective with someone else if they're not effective with their own self. So I think it's more of moving our people to be like, hey, y'all chasing the wrong thing. Just ground yourself and figure out how you're supposed to move and you align with that. And get our people encouraged and motivated to see the light and whatever that God placed them on this earth to do. Mm-hmm. And I think we just have a lot of people that's distracted and they don't know how to move. And it's just a bunch of chaos. Mm-hmm. And it's been chaos for a long time with mm-hmm. our people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Andrew, that looked like that resonated with you, what you was about to say.
Yes, the distraction, when she said distraction, that really hit me because I do feel like as a people, right, that we're in the perfect time right now. You see, like, just how Joe Biden is flipping the script in this country. We're sitting at tables we've never sat at before. So I feel it's the time to start addressing these issues within our community because they're just going to keep being like sores put over. And it's just time. Like, Black people are more than capable of moving forward, of progressing, of being able to not keep taking on this oppressive mentality. And it's time to start talking about stuff and addressing it and just cleaning it out in the clue. And then bring it, like Bianca said, bringing our people out, encouraging them. Like, it's stuff beyond this chaos. Like, stop sticking in the same old cycle, reuse narratives. It's okay to like break the mold, to step out of the box. That's my whole thing right now, is don't box me in.
Yeah, and I think about how when you said people don't want to talk about it, how that keeps that trauma protected when we don't talk about it, right? So when we, for instance, if we put this in a context of sexual trauma, for instance, or sexual abuse within a family, and we say, don't you go out there and tell nobody what happened in this house. Now you be quiet and don't you say nothing, right? And all it does is provides a covering for more dysfunction. And what I notice in our communities, especially when someone Black does something, our first tendency is to say, shh, don't you say nothing about brother. Don't you talk about it. Just you, right? When in fact, if we're going to heal our communities and we're going to break the cycle of trauma, then we have to talk about it. Mm-hmm. Right? We have to talk about the things that are happening and situated within the context of we are all victims to a system that we didn't sign up for. Like, we didn't sign up to be in this oppressive state and to walk through the world with weaponized skin and weaponized existence just because we're breathing. So having all of that pressed down, and now your kid does something and you done lost it on your kid, who it may not have even been as serious, but because of everything else that we're bringing with us, mm-hmm. now we're attacking the child who is innocent in this situation and never asked to be here. And we don't want to talk about it. We just want to continue on with it. And all it does is takes it into the next generation, because we're teaching a child not to apologize, not to recognize, not to seek help, not to do that critical examination or to spend some time in metacognitive reflection to think about, why did I just snap so hard? The baby just said, good morning. Hey. Why did I snap so hard just now? Is it really about them, or what is happening in me? So then that takes me back to thinking about what we talked about last time, of having competent mental health counselors and destigmatizing getting mental health support so we can deal with our stuff. Yeah. So what would you say, Andrea, to a parent, for instance? You know, you recognize that this is a cycle that's going on, and you recognize they need to get help and support. How would you put that to them in a way that they may be able to receive?
Really, it just depends on the parent. And for that type of situation, I do try to, like, build rapport with the parent, too. Because let's face it, nobody wants to hear something bad about their kid. Right. So once you kind of bridge a relationship, things about touchy subjects like that comes off a little better once that relationship is built. So first, just working with the student, because at that point, that's all I could control in the school environment is the student. Right. But then with the parent, bringing them in and trying to build relationships slowly as I'm working with the student, and then kind of suggest, hey, maybe you guys can continue what we've been doing here in school out in the community. So mm-hmm. I think for school professionals, it's good to kind of walk the parent and the student through kind of what help looks like, what these conversations are, how would it feel, to kind of get them encouraged to move to something more intensive outside of school. And being real, just having a real conversation with parents. And I don't think a lot of professionals are scared to approach parents in that kind of manner. We're often encouraged not to approach parents in that type of manner, and saying that you should kind of refer to outside sources. But I think once a parent has seen you with a kid that has trauma, that requires more than just a one-time parent interaction, or it should. So by the time you kind of have that conversation with the parent, you should have developed some type of relationship with the parent.
Yeah. And I definitely too have seen in my experience of modeling for the parent what that looks like.
Oh yeah.
So a lot of times our parents are so like amazed at how we at a school, or we as adults that are outside of the home, are able to get their kids to open up, or to, you know, calm down when they're upset, right? So even that tip of not matching the energy. Right. So if somebody is up here, I don't join you up here. I come down. So we can kind of de-escalate the situation, or validating what they're saying. Right. So even when I think about this situation with Kirk Franklin, validating that he felt disrespected, mm-hmm. and that you have a right to be upset if your child that you participated in bringing into this world and, you know, raised and took care of and all of that disrespects you. You have a right to be upset. You have a right to not be cursed at by your child. Mm-hmm. You have a right to not be screamed at by your child. You have a right to all of that. So nobody is judging your right to be mad. You can have that. Like, you got a right to be mad. Pissed, even, you got it right. But then the question is, after that validation, what could I have done differently in order to de-escalate the situation. And that's where that humility comes in. And I'm reminded that humility is a fruit of the spirit and is something that is not easily accessed, right? But nonetheless, it is a call for us to be humble. So how do I then train myself to approach a situation in humility, recognizing that as the parent, I am the wisdom in the relationship? So if I'm the wisdom in the relationship, then that means regardless of what's happening over there, I have to have enough self-management and self-control to be able to end the conversation.
Right.
Set some boundaries. So if we're going to communicate, we're not going to be able to communicate like this. Right. So when we've calmed down, then we can revisit this. Or maybe our only communication for a period of time is written communication because it takes more energy and effort. And maybe you don't put as many curse words into it. You know what I mean? But like putting some parameters around it, but presenting a different way, because I'm reminded that if this is a generational cycle, this is the way that you've learned. Again, this is normal. Right. So now how do you unlearn those behaviors? So do y'all have any other tips like that you might give to a parent where they're maybe kind of feeling a little bit convicted right now as to how they're dealing with their child? How else could we inspire them or help them to be able to stop and think about what's happening?
Right. For me, going back to epigenetics, what is interesting about it is that it's totally reversible. So mm-hmm. it's not something that stays with you. You can totally reverse even the science of it. So not even just the notion of changing your behavior. You genetically can change your behavior. You can get rid of those markers and change your whole generation. So I think that's interesting to know, and for parents to know that even in the whole scheme of things, your biological body can change based on the behavior. So if environments and behaviors cause your genetic makeup to change in a negative way, then you change your environments and your behaviors in a positive way, and that affects your next generation.
I think it's just having more conversations in building rapport with your children. I've seen a lot of disconnect of parents, and that's due to social media, that's due to technology, where families are not as connected as they once were. It's a superficial connection. You're connected through your phone, but have y'all really had deep level conversations to find out about their goals and what drives them and things that can actually move them forward? I just don't really hear a lot of that. So I would encourage the parents that it's okay, but I think you need to have conversations with your kids and to learn them and to really understand them, because there's a lot of parents that think that they know their child, but in actuality, they don't know their child at all.
Yeah. And Megan just put in the comments, teaching effective communication skills. So I think that too goes along with what you all are expressing there, and effectively expressing one's feelings, right? Being able to name your feelings. I was frustrated and disappointed when the school called me and told me X, Y, and Z, right? As opposed to cussing them out about the fact that the school called. Let's look inward and see, what am I really feeling, right? I feel embarrassed that the school keeps having to call me every day. And I know that you know how to behave because you do it at home. So that embarrasses me, right? But having that vulnerability and that humility to approach it as a conversation and a learning moment, as opposed to being reactive, right? And it's going to take practice. Like, we're not trying to pretend like this is easy, because again, these are learned behaviors. I'm 40, right? So that means I got 40 years of stuff that I need to unlearn, right? So it's a process. But I think when we really look through that lens of thinking about our own self-awareness and thinking about legacy. Andrea, you brought that up, like thinking about legacy and the impact that if I can make this change, that this can literally not just change my life, it can change my child's life and future generations to come. Because I do believe that people want their kids to do better than they did. Yeah. You know, so then that means that we have to do the hard work to give them a different experience. We can't keep doing the same thing and expecting a different result. So any other closing comments before we wrap up and tell the people how they can connect?
I just want to just tell the parents that right now, especially if you're in the Tampa Bay area, there has been a surge of gun violence. Mm-hmm. That is out here just wild. Mm-hmm. Parents, please talk to your children. Please learn your children. Please understand them because they are out here and there are young kings and queens that are dying every single day. So please work on your stuff so that you could be better to your child and check the cell phone.
Yeah. What about you, Andrea? Any final words?
No, I agree. The lines of communication should be open, particularly with parents and children. And then with parents and school stakeholders, because if these behaviors are also manifesting in the schools, this is a perfect opportunity for parents to be proactive in their students' discipline, because that in itself, behaviors and trauma could lead to a whole line of discipline. And then we get into prison, pipeline to prison, and why Black boys are acting out and how they're not dealing with trauma. So effective lines of communication with your child and with the school to kind of address these issues at once.
Yeah. So, Andrea, while you're talking, go ahead and tell the people where they can find you out here on these internets or in person or what have you. Let them know how they can connect with you.
Yes, absolutely. So Cultivator Academy is on Facebook and Instagram, and we will be accepting new students very soon. So if you are interested in working with a school-based counselor to kind of navigate you through the social-emotional issues and how it affects academics, then please reach out to me. I would love to work with students, all students, but I'm primarily focused on students of color because I have been a student of color and an educator of color. So I'm interested in helping my community.
Absolutely. And the final thing that I want to say is let's remember to speak life into this next generation, right? So even though what they are doing may not be what we want them to do, but continue to call forth the greatness in them, right? Because words have power. So make sure that we are thinking intentionally about the words that we choose to use with our young people and that we choose words that are going to bring forth the best parts of them and hopefully cause the other parts to die away. And we can just really be left with the part of them that we want to see because they're operating in that greatness. So having said that, you can connect with me on Instagram at Kimberlyn J or on my website at KimberlynJackson.com. I am going to be launching a new life coach class soon. So if you're looking for a life coach, holla at your girl. Feel free to DM me or send me a message on my website. And definitely look forward to you all continuing to join us here on The Whole Child. So Bianca, I'll give you the last word.
I love y'all. Y'all have a great night. Thank you for being here and sharing your expertise. And thank you for being a part of the squad. And yeah, y'all have a great night. Love y'all. And see y'all next episode.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.